Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's time to wake up.
But I'm exhausted.
Talking to me. Nice cup of morning roast.
Hi, how are you?
Featuring
Wilmore's finest, Monte Hill.
I'm not doing anything crazy.
The pride of the Excelsior, Joe Butcher Boy Shasky.
Take it out.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, the morning roast.
Baby. No, it's not Bonte Hill. It's more like Joe, baby. Joe Spadoni in for Bonte Hill alongside Sam Lubman is filling in for Joe Shasky. Halfway done, halfway home. But we still got a lot to get to. We got cousin Nick Friedell joining us at 8:30, courtesy of the River Islands guest line. Nick Friedell, our Odyssey NBA insider. Preview this Golden State Warriors, Los Angeles Clippers matchup tonight in Los Angeles in La La Land. And tip-off is at 7 o'clock, but coverage starts 6 o'clock with Warriors Live right here on 95.7 The Game, your home for Golden State Warriors basketball. And as you know, we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube, all powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. We've been talking about everything, you know, because quite frankly, the season's almost over, the year is almost over, and no team, Sam Lubin, has earned the right for us to dedicate an entire show today and talking about just them. The Niners, their season's over, basically. Their regular season's over. They're not going to the playoffs. Oh, the Warriors, yeah, they're hovering around 500. Stephen Curry's out tonight. And thus, my interest level in this game has also plummeted
And they just look very kind of blah.
The Giants, it's off season. They've made some exciting moves. The Giants actually kind of are exciting, but it's off season. We're not really talking that much baseball at the moment. The Sharks are the Sharks. It's a learning experience.
They're so back on the ice tomorrow.
So it's a poo-poo platter. It's a potpourri, if you will, of talking points. And one that you wanted to get to particularly, Sam Lubman. And as you know, or if for those of you who don't know, Sam Lubman, graduate of the University of Miami. He is a hurricane, baby. Here he comes, rocking like a hurricane. Sam Lubman, a little sad today because Jim Larrañaga, the longtime head coach over, head basketball coach, I should say, on the med side for Miami basketball, is stepping down, formerly of George Mason?
Yes. So yes. I'll give the background here on Jim Larrañaga, because I don't think that Miami Hurricanes men's hoops is a big talking point out here in the San Francisco, California Bay Area. So Jim Larrañaga took over the men's basketball program in 2011, which is the year I arrived at the University of Miami, following up Frank Haith. Frank Haith was... It was a so-so run. You had a couple of... I know you're trying to find the drop. Miami had a couple tournament appearances here and there. I think they beat St. Mary's one year in the first round of the tournament.
Don't let Evan Giddings hear that.
But the big thing under Frank Haith was that he got caught up in the Nevin Shapiro scandal. Where he's a booster who was also running a Ponzi scheme, who donated a bunch of Ponzi money to the university.
I hate when those Ponzi schemes get in the way.
It's a big thing in Miami. It was Larrañaga arrived to this program under a cloud of scandal. And he successfully steered that program through the scandal, took him to an ACC title in 2013, and basically had the most successful run as a head basketball coach in Miami Hurricanes men's basketball history. Yesterday, he announced that he was stepping down after it's been about 13 years now. And I'll be honest, I kind of had a feeling that he was going to be stepping down soon. The program's been struggling since that run to the Final Four a couple years ago. It was the Elite Eight a couple years ago. And he's had a couple Elite Eight runs, a couple Sweet 16 runs. So I kind of figured, though, that his time was coming, because he's getting up there in age, and the game's just getting a lot harder. But yesterday, he explained why he was stepping down. I thought his message was pretty interesting. Here's what he had to say on why he is stepping down mid-season.
I love the game, and I love the university that much. I felt like, okay,
There's one thing you got to constantly ask yourself. Are you going to give everything you have the commitment that it deserves? 100% of yourself, physically, mentally, emotionally, but I'm exhausted. I've tried every which way to keep this going. And I know I'm going to be asked a lot of questions, but I want to answer them before I'm even asked. What shocked me beyond belief was after we made it to the Final Four, just 18 months ago, the very first time I met with the players, eight of them decided they were going to put their name in the portal and leave. I said, don't you like it yet? No, I love it. I love Miami. It's great. But the opportunity to make money someplace else created a situation that you have to begin to ask yourself as a coach, what is this all about? And the answer is it's become professional.
I thought it's a very interesting and honest reason as to why he stepped down, Spadoni. You know, we saw Nick Saban step down as head coach of Alabama after last year, and coach he K. could say that, you know, Coach K was another one.
Jim Boeheim.
Yeah, he could say that, you know, it was time, I had to go home, I want to be with family, blah, blah, blah. I feel like a big part of it is what Larrañaga said. It's just coaching in college is so different now. It is no longer about those relationships. So when you're recruiting high school kids, you're no longer recruiting kids for your program. You're recruiting kids who are going to other programs. And it's just, listen, I like the transfer portal. I like the idea of the transfer portal. But it's just gotten so out of hand where every year you're seeing in basketball, you're seeing in football, you're seeing in all these sports. It's like every year you have to relearn who these teams are. There's not a lot of continuity year to year now. I mean, you look at Miami, they're going to be playing tomorrow. And they're going to have most of their starters playing. But if you're asking me what the Hurricanes are going to look like next year, Spadoni, I have no idea. It used to be that when you have a bunch of guys who are about to graduate, you know who the guys are going to be behind them who are going to take their spot when they do graduate. And I don't just mean Miami here. I mean any college, you know, program. But football, basketball, regardless of the sport, men's, women's. You know, you have those, like, the next people up, the next players up. But now with the transfer portal, it's just all these teams are up in the air every offseason. And it's to a point where, yeah, if you're a head coach, you're no longer recruiting these kids to be a part of your program. You're basically just being like, hey, we'll give you a bunch of money if you come play here. And for a lot of coaches who are kind of doing things the old way, there's just this new world of college sports. It's just really for them.
And I don't know what the answer is to it right now. And I don't think people at NCAA or the coaches or anyone really understands what the answer to this problem is. Is it delaying certain, you know, so we don't have what happened with Penn State and their football, right? Their backup quarterback wanted to go elsewhere because the transfer portal opens, so you have to go immediately to there. Or, you know, do they stay and they wait it out and maybe get an opportunity if someone goes down or a quarterback enters the draft or something like that. So it's this slippery slope right now that we're trying to kind of all learn together right now. And for the coaches that have been around for so long, to your point, like the Jim Larrañagas, like the Nick Sabans, like the Coach K, because this is it's all intersecting for the different sports right now. The Jim Boeheims, as I mentioned, and this is something we can get into with Cousin Nick Friedel, who is a Syracuse grad. So I'm sure he has some thoughts on the transfer portal as well and all this. But I'd just be tired. And you can hear it. He literally said it. He literally said in that response right here.
But I'm exhausted.
He's exhausted.
Yeah, that's how I feel every morning.
Not only do you have to worry about recruiting, you have to worry about your recruits leaving for someone else to a rival potentially, and leaving you just stranded out there. You're trying to build a winner. You're trying to do that. You're trying to coach the game of basketball. And how could you install your system with all these players leaving constantly? That's also goes back to the one and done, right? Goes back to the Kentucky, John Calipari, the Anthony Davis era, all that, right? It goes back to that. And that's kind of what is taking place now. You're seeing it all come to fruition right now. Players getting paid, players wanting them, and I can't fault the players in this either.
No, they're getting what they deserve.
Yes,
like, and it's like
what they're worth is what they're getting. They used to not get anything, and now you know what? I can't fault the player for saying, you know what, I'm going to Miami this year, but you know what, USC is going to pay me more money, and I'm going to go to USC next season.
Yeah. Which is wild. Like, Miami, they're no chump school either.
Exactly.
We got our stable billionaire donors. Yes. I mean, they've been paying these players for years. That's why we got in trouble for it in the past. Now it's okay. But also, a part of me is just like, to go off of what Coach L said.
But I'm exhausted.
Like, Yeah, whatever happened to a commitment meaning something? But commitments really don't mean anything as much anymore because...
Well, they are committing to the season.
Yeah, for the season, but that's it. I mean, that's just... If you're like Coach L, if you're like Coach Saban, like, those aren't... That's not a process that you're used to. Guys like Coach K, that's not what they're used to. Guys like Coach John Calipari, you know, who they're, you know, specialize in one-and-dones, maybe they're a little bit more suited for that. I always remember that 2011 Kentucky team with Anthony Davis, Michael Kidd, Gilchrist... Like
that's a name you haven't heard in a minute.
I know that's the name. Like I did not want them to win the title that year because I knew that would legitimize the one and done concept, and they won. And what do you know? It did. And I used to love watching college basketball, Spadoni. It was a lot of fun for me in middle school, high school, and college. It's become so hard for me though these last 10 years because I feel like every year we have to relearn who all these players are because it's just kids come in play for. A few games, even like would Kyrie Irving play like what 8 games or something at Duke? Yeah. Like
Zion didn't play that much.
Yeah. So it's like these coaches are basically babysitters for a year, and then they send those kids to the NBA. Now, I think part of that is because obviously the NBA used to have that high school to the NBA jump. They got rid of that. I think maybe they should go back to that if we're talking about solutions. I do think there are kids who should be able to jump from high school to the NBA if they are good enough.
Well, they try to do that, right, with the G League, right, with the Ignite, that the Jonathan Kamingas of the world, right? They're trying to do that.
Yeah, that's just the same situation with a different look, though. Like, I do think, because when you had that NBA to the, or that high school, the NBA pathway, I don't remember. I felt like you didn't have as many one-and-dones, though, because the kids who didn't take that high school, the NBA path, did so because they needed a year or two in college. And I felt like that was beneficial to the college game. College football, though, has become totally different because, you know, I feel like the transfer portal was most needed for college football because you'd have these situations where, you know, Coach A comes into a kid's room and says, hey, come play at State. And in my spread offense, you know, let's pretend this player is a wide receiver. Coach comes and says, hey, come to State in my spread offense. I'll have you a top, you know, 10 pick in 3 years. But then, you know, Coach A gets hired by Tech after a 1 year. He takes off. Coach B comes in. It's like, yeah, we're going to have a run-heavy system that you're going to do a lot of blocking for, and that's going to hurt this kid's draft value overall. But, you know, this wide receiver, he'd be stuck there because you lose a year of eligibility because you have to sit out if you go transfer. So the transfer portal was a way to kind of even things up. You know, coaches can hop around whenever they want. The players should be able to as well. But I feel like now it's gotten to a point where it's like the pendulum has swung so far in the other direction that I feel like you got to put some sort of checks on this thing.
That's
like
what I'm getting at. What's the solution?
I think you can't be able to transfer 2 years in a row. Like if you like Cam Ward as an example, let's say he had eligibility left. He transferred from Washington State to Miami this year. If you want to transfer again, like no, you transferred last year. You got to wait a year before you transfer again. Because now they're taking away the JUCO eligibility now. So like these kids are going to be playing in college for a while. So I just, to be able to transfer every year, that just seems like too much. If you could make it where you have to play at least, you can't transfer in back-to-back years, that just feels like a nice check to kind of keep it from getting out of hand.
Explain real quick, the junior college transfer, what are they doing now?
Well, I guess there's a new rule that came out. I guess I was actually, Steven Rizzotto brought this up the other day.
Oh, Steven.
Basically, so like, a lot of times you'd have players play a couple years in the junior college ranks and play 2 years, and then they would transfer
just
to
like
the
you
big
would
program.
If you're going to school, right? You would go the 2 years at JC, then you transfer to a 4 year.
You know who actually did that of all people, and not the exact example I think I should be using here, but Cam Newton. He was at Florida for a couple years behind Tim Tebow. Then he transferred to a junior college for a year, and then he went to Auburn. But, you know, that counts as a year of eligibility. So you had, I think, 2 years at Florida, a year in JUCO, and then a senior year at Auburn. Now, though, in modern-day Cam Newton in that situation, that JUCO year would no longer count against his eligibility. So he would still have had a year left after his senior year of eligibility to hang around.
Interesting.
So you could play 3 years of JUCO, and then you can have 4 years at whatever D1 program that you transfer to, in theory, with this new rule with the junior college thing. So you could literally have kids playing like Cam Rising, who's going to be going to like his ninth year next year. My guy McCormick, the tight end on Miami, living out my dream of another nine-year
so
college career.
So we're going to see a lot more Brandon Whedons and Bo Nixes, is what you're saying?
I think that's kind of what we're looking at right now. I mean, because with some of these, with some of the NIL money, you could probably get more money at college than you would be in the NFL.
Well, that's a good point, too, in all this. And again, I'm not telling athletes that do whatever it does to get paid. Get your money. I feel that, man. You don't know what your NFL career is. You don't even know if you're going to get drafted to the NBA or the NFL. The chances of doing that is probably not likely.
And most of these college kids probably aren't going to be going pro. You know, as they say, you know, most college athletes go pro in something other than sports. So for a lot of these kids, like, that's your opportunity to get your bag. Another thing is, obviously, I mean, a lot of these kids come out of, you know, low-income situations. And so this was kind of like the Reggie Bush story. You know, his family was not a family of means, if I recall. So the university was helping his family pay rent, which is why he got in all that trouble. The NIL money removes that situation, you know, because these college kids, they finally have the money to take care of their families. A lot of these college kids have children of their own that they need to take care of. And so they don't need to, you know, scramble for money to put diapers on their kids. You know, they have the means to do that. So yeah, I'm all for kids getting that NIL money. But when it gets to the point where it's almost like the sport is cannibalizing itself with the scramble for NIL money, it's no longer about where can I go to become a better player. It's where can I go to maximize my dollars, and then whatever else happens after that happens there. So I just feel if you put some sort of check on it to contain some of the movement here, it still gives the player some leeway, but like within reason, so to speak.
That's Sam Lubman on college. There you go. The state of college sports with Sam Lubman. Maybe that'll be a new podcast you can find on the Odyssey app, which is free, by the way.
I know Bonte and I have always kind of, we've kind of talked about doing a college football podcast, but I mean, there's so many podcasts out there. And
Podcast-itis.
I mean, I already got the garlic fries and baseball guys, and then we're doing the show every week. The fine time to do college football talk is, I'm just making excuses. We're tired.
Come on. You're feeling
But I'm exhausted.
There you go. At the same time.
We did it at the same time. That was great. So in sync. It's almost like we work together on a daily basis.
888-957-9570. So putting a bow on that and revisiting something that Steve Kerr had to say yesterday. And by the way, we're going to replay Steve Kerr in his fantastic interview yesterday with Dan Devone and Lorenzo Neal coming up in around the 9:20 segment. So stay tuned for that. Steve Kerr, we'll hear from him again. This is something you had to say, though, yesterday as we pivot back to the Warriors and their loss to the Lakers. They're taking on the Los Angeles Clippers tonight. Coverage of that starts at 6 with Warriors Live. Tip off at 7 with the great Tim Roy, the voice of your Golden State Warriors. And Nick Friedell joining us here in about 12 minutes, our Odyssey NBA insider, to discuss all things Golden State Warriors and the state of the NBA versus the NFL when it comes to ratings, et cetera, et cetera. But this is something that Steve Kerr said yesterday in regards to Stephen Curry and LeBron James and comparing them to Magic Johnson and Larry Bird.
I got a lot of memories of my childhood, you know, growing up rooting for Magic and watching the Lakers and the Celtics play in the finals. And those were amazing days, iconic days. What we've seen from Steph and LeBron, particularly meeting in the finals 4 different times, you know, they are basically the Magic and Bird of their day, for sure. I mean, just not only brilliant, you know, all-time players, but charismatic, you know, showmen. Everywhere they go, people are, you know, they're coming to the game to see those two. That's pretty unique, and it's also unique to see the rivalry that, you know, turned into them being teammates this past summer in Paris, and for me to be there and observe that was just incredible.
Where are we ranking this Stephen Curry and LeBron James rivalry? Now, the rivalry is kind of like, I'll say dissipated, because Christmas was awesome. It was a spectacular showdown. The hate's not there anymore, though. Sam Lubman, the hate is no longer there when it comes to LeBron James and Stephen Curry. Like 5-6 years ago, we're not seeing LeBron James embrace Stephen Curry and bear hugging him the way we've seen. It's been a shift. Ever since LeBron became a Laker, and the Warriors and Lakers play each other a lot more than when LeBron and Steph used to play each other, which is twice a year. Now it's 4 times, and maybe 5 times if you got the NBA in-season tournament, the NBA Cup, whatever the hell you want to call it. But we're seeing this shift in this buddy-buddy approach. And a lot of people seem to think that this is what's wrong with the NBA right now. It's what's wrong with sports. Everyone wants to be friends. Everyone wants to be hanging out. We want to be in each other's podcast. We want to be hanging out with Draymond. We want to be hanging out with Paul George. Name Podcast X, as you're saying, Podcast-itis. Everyone's got one. You want to be hanging out with them. Jalen Brunson has one, right? Like, there is something to be said about good old-fashioned hate that is missing in today's sports. And I do think that although Larry and Magic became friends at the end, There was that sports
hatred.
They
never liked each other
on
the court.
They hated each other on the court.
And that's what made it feel real. Now,
yes.
Now, yeah, and I do believe part of it is...
They weren't even alive back then.
No, they did not like each other at all back then. And yeah, I do think that kind of cheapens this rivalry a little bit. Like, you know, hate is what fuels a rivalry, I feel like, a lot of it. And it's become a very respectable rivalry now between these two. And I do think part of it is... How about this? I think part of it is LeBron knows that in this rivalry, he knows that he's lost it to Steph. Steph has the titles 3-1. You know, speaking of 3-1 leads, LeBron obviously has, that's a big one from LeBron. But Steph won 3 of those 4 finals matchups. Steph is the one who, I believe, reinvented the game a little bit more than LeBron did. Because LeBron was obviously a great player, but what Steph did...
He didn't reinvent the game, LeBron James. He just dominated in a way
dominant,
that we never saw.
What Steph did with the three-pointer, it changed how teams play.
It did.
Maybe a little bit too much so, because now there's too many threes.
Did it change it for the better?
You look at LeBron's basketball reference page. I think this is one of this, to me, is why I believe Steph wins this rivalry. You look at LeBron's basketball reference page and look at the 3 points attempted per game from 2003 to 2014 and then 2014 through now. There is a massive jump. And I think it's no coincidence that his jump in three-pointers coincided with Steph basically taking the reins of the NBA. I mean, this was the LeBron James era of the NBA, but Steph won that era. So I think LeBron is showing Steph that respect, because apples to apples, LeBron is probably a better player than Steph. I'll come out and say it. I don't mean to upset Warrior fans with that one.
That's not a hot take. He's had a better career than Steph.
Yeah, he has. And this is no knock on Steph. They've both been incredible. They're easily the top two players of this era. But Steph took away all the shine of LeBron's era. Like, Steph Curry won the LeBron James era. So if you're LeBron, you can't really go at Steph with that rivalry hatred that I think you would normally have, because Steph owns you. So LeBron's kind of taken a different path where, rather than kind of keep that rivalry going, he's going to show his respect to Steph. He's going to pay his dues, because LeBron, he's, you know, secure in his career as well. And so when you have that situation, yeah, that makes it a lot easier for LeBron to kind of look at Steph as a respectable rival instead of a hated rival. And obviously Steph, being the nice guy that he is, he'll, you know, return that in kind. So that's where I think that kind of came here, how this kind of dynamic evolved here. If the finals distribution was a little bit different, I don't know, maybe there is still, like, if LeBron had 3 to Steph's 1, is it different? We'll never know that, but that's how I look at it. It's just, Steph won the rivalry with LeBron, so LeBron's not going to make it an intense rivalry.
I just don't think, listen, it's hard. Like, the Cavs and Warriors were the rivalry. Is LeBron James versus Stephen Curry a quote-unquote rivalry?
I think it is, more so than Warriors-Cavs was.
Well, that's the thing, though, because it was Warriors-Cavs, and baked into that was Kevin Durant, too. That was a big part of it.
Mm-hmm. And he was part of that interview with Steph and LeBron that aired for a minute and
yes.
a half on Christmas Day.
Right, and then all three of them obviously played on Christmas. The Suns played and all that, and we'll see with Kevin Durant. Is he playing tomorrow? Like, we'll see. But there is part of me that just wanted more out of this, and I think the way we're watching it end is kind of, it's bittersweet, because you still see the greatness between both of them, but you also see that neither of these teams are going to be anywhere at the end of this year.
No,
they're going to maybe win a round in the playoffs,
maybe
even get to the playoffs first and foremost. Maybe they're playing teams.
If you combine these teams together, maybe you can do that.
Oh, yeah, if you combine these teams together, I think they're the Western Conference favorite.
LeBron to the Warriors.
Well, it's LeBron, Anthony Davis, Draymond Green, Steph Curry, and Andrew Wiggins. Yeah, I think that's a pretty good 5-7.
Yeah,
right,
you're probably some damage with that.
Yeah,
one.
You're probably going to the finals with that crew.
The Golden State Lakers.
There you go. Oh, that sounds gross.
Angeles Warriors.
Yeah, there's just that.
Well, I mean, you guys got to do Golden State because it's a statewide team.
Well, that makes sense. Yes.
In this hypothetical that will never happen.
By the way, the best team in California right now, it's the team the Warriors are playing tonight.
Ugh.
Los Angeles Clippers,
I'm gonna take
ladies
these calls.
And gentlemen. 888-957-9570. I see Word is calling in. Word, you heard. 888-957-9570. We got the great. And I don't say this lightly. The great Nick Friedell, cousin Nicky, coming up here. Oh, in about 5-6 minutes. But if you want to get some calls in, 888-957-9570. Where do you rank Stephen Curry and LeBron James as a rivalry for you? Is it the best rivalry of the last, let's say, century, of this century, of the 2000s till now? Has this been the best rivalry? Are you putting Brady Manning ahead of that. I think I am. That one for me, just maybe I was younger at the time and it just hit different, but Brady v. Manning, them being in the same conference for so long, being in the AFC, the MVPs, the championships won between them, that one's certainly up there for me. Are you going still Giants-Dodgers? Is that still hitting the same way? The Giants have just gotten owned by the Dodgers in the regular season for so long. It's hard for me to call that the rivalry. Yankees-Red Sox, is that still hitting the early 2000s? Obviously, it was there. Obviously, they've had some battles here in the 2010s as well when it came to the playoffs. Is that hitting it for you? Well, we'll ask Nick Friedell coming up next where he has Steph and LeBron ranked all-time as a rivalry. 888-957-9570 is the number. That's what's coming up. Coming up on the game, I should say. And it's going to be sponsored by Bay Area Fast Track.
But I'm exhausted.
Now back to the morning roast with Bonte Hill and Joe Shasky. Take it away, Bonte.
Spadoni and Lubman in for Bonte Hill and Joe Shasky here on the morning roast. And we're going to be joined by Odyssey NBA insider here in just a second, I should say. Nick Friedell, cousin Nick Friedell, friend of the station, friend of the program. We love hearing from cousin Nick. And we love when you download that Odyssey app to listen to interviews like we're about to have. It is free. It is awesome. It is spectacular. I urge you to download that Odyssey app. We've been talking Warriors. We've been talking Niners. We talked some Sharks. We talk some Miami Hurricane basketball as Jim Larrañaga is stepping down. He discussed that, the transfer portal, all that, this, that, and the other. But we got cousin Nick. That means we got to hit the intro.
To China, down there.
Where in the world is
the sexiest voice in all of sports media, Nick Friedell.
Nick has this rugged masculinity that all of us at ESPN are jealous of.
I don't know about friend of the program because I think you're lumping me in with being a friend of Friedell, and I don't want to be associated with all that.
Thank you, Nick, and your voice is very deep and sexy. I have
What you gonna do, brother, when Mac Jones is coming for you?
How would you describe the level of hope that everyone else spoke with yesterday in regards to what James Wiseman brought?
What are they talking about regarding Wiseman and like the impact he can make this season?
Yeah, just how much
obviously you can't predict the future and we'll see what happens this summer. But would you be willing to take less money?
Bro, I'm not answering your questions no more. I'm sorry. Next question.
Oh, it's so good. On the line is Odyssey Sports NBA insider Nick Friedell. If you're a fan of the NBA, make sure to check out the variety of NBA Odyssey podcasts wherever you get your content. He joins us now on the River Islands guest line. All guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands? River Islands in Lathrop. And the sheer audacity, Nick, of that intro. And I'm still trying to figure out the question you were asking one Gareth Burke there. And first and foremost, Nick, are you calling from Europe? Are you in Europe right now?
I am back, Mr. Spadoni.
Okay.
You know, I do love that after all these years, I've got a Spadone and Lubman and Friedell show. I mean, we have arrived.
Finally made it happen. Long
last. We have finally made it happen. So I'm proud of you guys. I think Gareth is still trying to figure out what I was asking.
Well, you were asking about the level of hope when it came to James Wiseman, and by the
and I think we're still waiting.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that hope is out the door. I think the Indiana Pacers are asking about that as well. Nick Friedell joining us here on the River Islands guest line. Nick, we want to bring in this conversation because we were having this because Steve Kerr joined our station, I should say, and talked about Steph and LeBron. And obviously, the showcase that they put on Christmas was awesome. It was amazing. When the NBA, a day where it was getting taken over by the NFL, it felt good to see Steph and LeBron carry the league once again on their shoulders. And not to say that they're like for like Magic and Bird, because I think Magic and Bird is just such on a different level when it comes to rivalries. But where would you rank Steph and LeBron as a rivalry in regards to, let's just keep it to this century, You can go NFL, you can go Major League Baseball, or you can stick to the NBA. Stephen LeBron is a rivalry. You say what?
I say in the last 25 years, it's about the best that we've got. Because everything else that I can think of off the top of my head would be teams. You know, Yankees, Red Sox, Michigan, Ohio State. Nothing else player to player at the level they've been at and at the games that they've had between themselves and all those finals would rival anything in the last 20, 25 years. Those two have single-handedly, I think with help to a lesser extent from Kevin Durant, carried the league for a long time in the last 10 to 15 years. And what worries me, guys, looking ahead, and I've talked to you both about this over time, but Steph and LeBron are the two guys that people who do not follow the NBA at all know in this era. And LeBron has, what, maybe a year and a half left? Maybe two. We'll see. And Steph, he had that interview with Malika the other day where he admitted, you know, the end is near, and we're not going to see that much more time play out. So I really, really think that the NBA is going to slide even more when those two go, because they have been the standard bearers for so long. So as cool as it was to see that game and see the end of it play out the way that it did between those two and Steph's hitting all those crazy shots, as we know in the Bay, he can do, and that's what makes him so unbelievable. The other part to that is there are not too many more games between those two coming, and the NBA is in for a real problem when they leave the stage.
Well, that and you bring me to my next point. And, you know, having those two teams and two franchises, I get it. It being the primetime matchup, the 5 o'clock West Coast, 8 o'clock East Coast, like, I get that. But in years past, it was never going to be a matchup between two play-in teams. It was going to be, what is the next championship matchup going to be? Or do they do a replay of last year's championship matchup, right? So to have the Boston Celtics play earlier in the day when no one really gave a rip that they're playing the Sixers, a bad Sixers team at that, and the Sixers end up winning it, it just felt like, I understand why you want to promote Stephen Curry and LeBron James, but this is the problem with the NBA right now. They're going to be gone in a few years, and to not have a guy like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on the stage, the next up-and-coming team, that Oklahoma City Thunder, he dropped 45 last night, looked incredible. Like, I thought that was just a disservice to what the future of the league should be about, and it should be about celebrating guys like Shai Gilgeous, or hell, a Ja Morant who's been balling. They dropped, 155 yesterday, something ridiculous? Teams like that. And but at the same time, I understand why they did it, but if you're looking at the future right now and you're Adam Silver, you got to start promoting these young guys more and more and have them be the faces, right?
You do, but the flip side to that, and I can say this given my experience looking at the metrics of the last 15 years or so. I mean, I remember going into those conference rooms when we would all sit together in L.A. and they would say, okay, LeBron is at the top and there's a big gap and Steph is second and there's a bigger gap and Kevin is third. And then after that, it was like, oh, okay. This was more for what kind of stories that we were trying to produce at the time. And that has turned into the ratings conversation. I think the problem in trying to say, okay, we're going to focus on that next era. Guys, we don't know three things about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. The first thing that comes to mind, after he is an incredible player, he's probably going to win an MVP, if not this year, at some point in the next couple, is that he was in that absolutely terrible commercial with Chet Holmgren that I still can't believe showed up so many times. But we just don't know enough about a lot of the next wave. I mean, Ja was supposed to be the face. He was beloved. The league was trying to push him, and then he had all his problems off the floor. Zion was supposed to be a face. He can't stay on the floor. He can't play consistently. Tatum is a title winner now in Boston. He is an incredibly talented player, but his personality, at least publicly, shows absolutely nothing that's of interest to people in and outside of the game. So there's a reason why Steph and LeBron have held on to the top spot for so long, on top of being two of the best we've ever seen play. People appreciate who they seem to be from a public perception standpoint. And the NBA, guys, it just does not have those next guys coming. And it's not to say that somebody won't appear. I know there's a lot of hope around Victor Wembanyama, but I just don't see it right now. I don't see people going out of their way to go, oh, what did Wemby do tonight? You know, awesome player, but it's more to that when you're trying to become the next face of the league.
I mean, you're talking about the next face of the league. I look at it, Nick, where it's like, for a long period of time, from 1980 to 2019, you had a lot of dynasties during that time, where it was the Lakers and Celtics, the Bulls, the Rockets, the Heat, the Warriors, the Lakers and Spurs. But in the last 6 years, you've had six different teams win an NBA championship, which is the level of parity we have not seen since the 1970s. How much of it also is just right now there's no like one dominant big bad team for all the other teams in the league to chase, like there was for an almost 40-year period of NBA history?
I think it's a big part of it, because think about this, guys. Let's focus on the Warriors. When the Warriors first won that first title, it was like, oh, man, this team is fun. And people knew Steph, and this ties back to everything we're talking about now, because they had followed him from Davidson, because he was hitting all those threes. And then he gets to the pros, and he's hitting even more threes with Klay, and Draymond's playing great, and you've got Kerr hitting all the buttons that they needed to win that first title. And they really were loved. And then they lose to LeBron, and then Kevin comes. And in a broader discussion about the league, I really think that's where the NBA lost a lot of people as far as the regular season goes. Because Kevin goes to the Warriors, and we were all sitting there watching this play out. It was like, oh, God, well, who cares about these games now in the regular season? Like, this team is just so much better than everybody else. So the point there, though, is people hated the Warriors, but they were still tuning in to watch them because at that point they wanted to watch them lose. So there was that juice and storyline behind, all right, well, this team has gone from loved to hated. And now, who is that next team that's out there? Again, it's not to say that it won't happen. It is to say that it doesn't exist in the moment. And if you were buying stock into what the short-term future holds, I'm just very, very concerned. And I say that as somebody who's made their professional livelihood around the league for the better part of two decades at this point. There's just not a lot of interest in the day-to-day like there was, to your point, 5, 10, 15 years ago.
On the line is Odyssey Sports NBA insider Nick Friedell, joining us courtesy of the River Islands guest line, Spadoni and Lubman, in for Bonte Hill and Joe Shasky here on the Morning Roast. And taking more of a deep dive into the league itself and to the Golden State Warriors in particular, tough loss, obviously, on Christmas Day. Austin Reeves, the game winner there late. Flurry from Steph to even tie it up late. It was awesome to watch. But, you know, you look back at last year, Nick, and you fast forward to this year, and if you just look at the records, it damn near identical. This time last year, you lose to Denver in Denver on Christmas Day, and you're a 500 team. Fast forward to now, you're a game over 500. You don't have Klay Thompson. There's no Chris Paul on this team. You're asking a lot of Brandon Pajemski, Jonathan Kuminga. Buddy Hield is looking like the Buddy Hield of old, where he was a journeyman, right? Andrew Wiggins, you have a great performance from him. You have a great performance from Steph Curry, and it's still not enough to beat a Lakers team that didn't even have their best player in Anthony Davis. So just give us the pulse on this Warriors team right now, what you've been seeing, and I guess what you expect to see going forward from them, because You know, we had Steve Kerr on yesterday, and he thinks it's just a confidence issue. There's a lot of issues right now at the Golden State Warriors, and I don't know what the remedy is right now going forward for them.
Spadone, I don't think there is a remedy, because I think the reality is they are what their record is. They're just not good enough. And the problem for the Warriors is they've been so damn good for so long that you're judging them based on titles. You're judging them based on their ability to get into the postseason and make some noise. You're not saying, oh, well, you know what would be a really great year for this team? To make the postseason, to win a first-round series, and then say, ah, you know, we gave everything we had, and it's just not enough. When you have Steph still playing at the level he's at, which is incredible, you're trying to find ways to make another run happen. And with the current roster construction, I just don't see that as a possibility. So, of course, the next question is, all right, well, then what happens next? I think they have to make a move. But, guys, I feel like we're trapped in the Bradley Beal conversation from 4 or 5 years ago. Like, oh, man, if they could just get Beal, what do they have to trade? What would it take? I know there's a lot of at least speculation around Jimmy Butler right now. I actually think he would fit in that Warriors locker room. I think he would fit within the framework of what they built. And don't forget, Mike Dunleavy played with Jimmy in Chicago for a couple of years. Draymond played with Jimmy in the Olympics in Rio. I mean, there are guys he has a solid working relationship with already. I've covered Jimmy as closely as anybody since he came into the league. If you're trading for Jimmy to get him, though, Miami's going to say, all right, give us all your young prospects and a bunch of draft picks. So in order to get him, I don't think that's enough either. It's a long way of saying I think the Warriors are stuck in a bad, bad place because they're only going to be judged on how close were they to another championship. And with the way things are right now and the possibilities that are out there, I'm not saying they can't get better. I just don't see them as a legitimate title contender.
I mean, you, based on what we've been seeing just these last couple weeks, Nick, it's hard to disagree with you. This team started off 12-3, and they're 3-11 since, with no Steph tonight in L.A. against the Clippers. Probably going to be 3-12 a stretch here to get into that even 15-15 record. But you know, you're talking about Jimmy Butler there. Another guy whose name is popping up here at this station is Zion Williamson. You mentioned him a few minutes ago as potential, you know, future face of the league type player. Zion's a guy who I look at. He's a lot younger. So he's a guy you can kind of maybe build around after Steph retires. But I don't know, is that a big whale, so to speak, worth chasing? I don't mean to take a shot at his weight with that one there, but is that a player worth chasing for the Warriors in terms of what they would have to give up to bring him in? Or is that just a lot of kind of talking hot air that's going to end with him staying on the Pelicans and the Warriors going in a different direction?
Sam, I wouldn't go near Zion if you paid me, if I were Mike Dunleavy.
Wow, really?
No way. And I say that because at this stage of his career, he has shown repeatedly he just cannot stay on the floor. I actually was in New Orleans when the Warriors played the Pelicans a few weeks ago. And I went to the Pelicans facility and I saw Zion, and he is just big again. I mean, he's put on a lot of weight again. And it's sad because, again, the NBA needed desperately for him to be that next guy, the next face. And it just hasn't happened. And I don't believe whether you put Zion in a different setting or not, that he is focused enough to be able to keep the weight off. I say this in context because, and I'm the first to acknowledge this, you guys know full well, and Bonta and Joe love to remind me every time, I did not think the Wiggins deal was going to work for the Warriors because I had watched Andrew Wiggins for several years pretty closely in Minnesota, and you got a really great performance one night, and you got another performance where he was just kind of going through the motions. And the feeling when I would talk to people in the organization,
was, all right, well, if you get him into our system, we will bring the best out of him. He'll be playing with Steph. He'll be playing with Draymond. And I just never believed that it could happen. I was wrong. Andrew Wiggins was the second best player on that title team a couple years ago. Andrew Wiggins. I mean, he was awesome behind Steph. So is there a chance with Zion that you bring him over to the Bay and, okay, he keeps the weight off and he's focused and there are no health concerns? Sure, I think the Wiggins deal proves that. But the flip side of that, guys, is, and Sam, this is where it's all headed. If you're the Pelicans and you have put everything into Zion and wanted him so desperately to be the guy, you're going to ask for everything back from the Warriors in this hypothetical situation. So I wouldn't make that deal at all. But if the Wiggins acquisition showed anything, it is that there's always hope for a talented player in the right setting. I think the difference is there were no real questions about Wiggins' health day to day. There are about Zion, and that's why for me it would be not a chance.
Wow, that's interesting there. We talked about the Zion situation. You kind of mentioned how the NBA really wanted him to kind of take off there and be that next star. Like, what did happen then with him in New Orleans? Like, how did it just not take off like the NBA was kind of hoping with him? Was the situation just like a bad kind of culture set up in New Orleans? Was it something to do with him? Do we all just over evaluate what he could bring to the table? Like, just where did it go wrong with Zion to the point where there's all that talent that you're kind of cautioning this team to stay away from?
When you're going into the NBA, guys, the culture and the setup of any organization for a young player is incredibly important, and it just doesn't seem like the framework was in a solid place with the Pelicans. Now, having said that, having watched Zion in his first few years in the league here, you can blame the Pelicans all day long, and you can say, well, they didn't have everything set up the way they should have. The other part is Zion just kept getting big. I mean, this is just the reality. He could not keep the weight off when the injuries appeared. And as you know, it's a cycle. If you have hamstring injuries or knee injuries and you're not able to move as much, the worst thing you can do is gain more weight because it's just putting more pressure on the joint. I remember going to a shoot around at Chase Center like 3 years ago, and you're seeing him walk around and you're like, what in the world? Like, that was when the Pelicans were so concerned that videos had gotten out that they weren't letting him kind of get ready or get change out there on the floor on his own. So there were always some people around him so that you couldn't get a clear view of exactly what's happening. I mean,
Nick, he had Mountain Dew commercials and you could see his weight being a problem in the commercial doing it for soda. It was that bad.
I mean, it's I really feel bad for him. And Joe, I mean, when you go back to Zion at Duke, I think universally everybody was like, oh my gosh, this guy is unbelievable.
Oh, he blew through his shoe. Remember that? It was like a big
son of Obama.
Obama was there,
That's right. That's right. I mean, everybody sat there and went, this could be the next guy. And there was so much hope that he brought because you want to talk about a town that just does not have seemingly any interest in a team. It's New Orleans with the Pelicans. But here comes Zion after all the debacle at the end with Anthony Davis. All right, this is the guy. And he just cannot stay on the floor. And in the NBA, when you can't stay on the floor, there's nothing you can say. There's nothing a team can do. You are just in a bad, bad spot. And that's why Zion could go anywhere. The biggest thing he has to change is when he looks into the mirror, he's got to be focused on getting the best version of himself out there each and every night. And right now, for whatever reason is going on, that has not been the case.
Talking with Odyssey Sports NBA insider Nick Friedell here on the Morning Roast. Spadoni and Lubman in Fort Bonta Hill and Joe Shasky. You've been so good to us, Nick. We'll get you out of here with this one. The Dennis Schroeder acquisition. It's early. Four games in. But the results have not been promising. Your thoughts on the acquisition itself and the Warriors trying to get Dennis Schroeder involved more and more in how he's looked in a Golden State Warriors uniform?
Joe, I liked it initially. It made sense. It was a veteran guard for a veteran team that was trying to get the younger pieces to come along. It just hasn't looked right to this point. Where I would caution everybody in saying, oh, no, it's not going to work, there's always a learning curve when you're learning to play with Steph Curry in this system. Guys do not understand sometimes just what it takes because of how much attention that he draws. The name that comes to mind that we all watched was Kelly Oubre, especially thinking back to the
Open. Your
boy. Yeah, my best friend, Kelly. But some guys just, they don't get it. I mean, Oubre had so many open looks from three based off of the attention that Steph drew and the open spaces on the floor that he created, and he just couldn't knock down those shots, and it wasn't a fit. Schroeder has played with a lot of different guys. He's played in big games before, especially on the international level. I think it'll work out better than what we've seen. The problem, guys, is the Warriors certainly were hoping that it would work out immediately, that you could just plug him in and he would start rolling and it would give a jolt to everybody else. That clearly has not happened. And now the next question is, okay, well, what's the next deal? Because you better make another deal. This team doesn't look like it's going anywhere. So I'm not sure when it's going to come, but I would be shocked at this point if the three of us aren't talking prior to the deadline and Mike Dunleavy and that staff hasn't made another deal. Because at this stage with Steph, you can't just run it out with a team that's going to hover around 500 rest of the way. I've said several times, I don't see a situation where the Warriors go from mediocrity all the way back to another title or close to it. But with the expectations as high as they always are, and with Joe Lacob behind the scenes pushing for whatever's coming next, I would just be really, really surprised if Schroeder's the only move that this team makes.
Yeah, I mean, on that note, Nick, I mean, there's two guys on this team who we mentioned a lot, Jonathan Kuminga and Brandon Podziemski. Both were different levels of untouchable this past summer during the Lowry Markkanen trade talks. I'm kind of curious now, as we go forward, obviously Lowry's no longer on the table because he's not eligible to be traded until the day after the trade deadline, but we're looking at that trade deadline, I believe, it's February 15th, I believe, is the day. Are Jonathan Kuminga and Brandon Podziemski, are they still going to be on this team after the trade deadline passes?
Sam, I'm not sure where they will end up right now, but they cannot be a reason why a deal wasn't made, because there was so much chatter in the summer. Warriors didn't want to include Pods in something, and you know, they want to get more for Kuminga if he gets moved. If it's me and I'm sitting there looking at all the possibilities over the next few years, and those are still the best two trade assets that you have, I am moving those guys if the right deal presents itself. But this is the issue in the NBA. And this is where fans sometimes get it all twisted, because everybody is fascinated by trades. They're fun to talk about, think about what can happen, the different possibilities. It is so hard to actually pull off trades in the league because there are so many different factors that play into it. It's the financial stuff. It's, can you get contracts to match up? Do teams feel like they're getting an equal share on both sides? I just don't know if, because there was so much hope around both of those guys, that Mike is going to just throw them in some deal just to make a deal happen. Having said that, if it's me and a team calls about Kuminga and I'm unsure if I'm the Warriors, if I want to give him that max or close to max, whatever he's looking for in that next deal coming up,
I would move him because I just have never gotten the sense that he fits in the system the way this team likes to play.
Nick, you are very good to us this morning. Appreciate the time, man, and we'll talk again soon.
Always, guys. Keep rolling. It's great to hear you.
You too, man. Yeah, he's the best. It's Cousin Nick Friedell. That was Odyssey Sports NBA Insider Nick Friedell. Remember to check out the variety of NBA Odyssey podcasts wherever you get your content. Cousin Nick, there he goes. You can find that entire interview on YouTube or on the free Odyssey app. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station. Always live on the free Odyssey app. Sam Lubman, your takeaway from that conversation with Cousin Nick.
Oh, man, my Zion hopes are in shambles right now after hearing that.
I mean, the way he talks about him, I feel like you're buying low. He seems to think it's going to cost an arm and a leg. I'm not so sure.
Maybe it's an arm and a
chicken leg. There you go for Zion Williamson.
Well, if he doesn't eat it on the way over here,
apparently. Oh, that's mean.
He's like how I set that up. He's kind of like the white whale they've been chasing there. I have to make a Moby Dick reference.
You know, call me Ishmael.
Yeah, man. Love the references we make on this show.
But I'm exhausted.
There we go. I am exhausted. I'm not going to lie. I slept so much these last 2 days, Spadoni, when I was off, and yet I'm still tired.
What do you have to be tired about? We're talking about sports. You're tired for just talking sports?
It's been a rough year for you, boy.
Been a rough year?
Oh, yeah.
Great. Look at that hair.
Oh, no, hey, man. The hair is one of the few things I got going for me right now. But
Allie's listening, right? So there you go.
I doubt she's tuned in. Oh. If we start talking about how terrible Jake Moody is, we might be able to get her on the phone, but we're a ways away from that.
Leave him alone. Only Moody we're worried about right now is Moses. Is he back tonight or no?
Possibly. Only God knows. But no, when you look at the Zion thing, I'll be honest, but only a big part of Zion to the Warriors is, yeah, I am counting on that Warriors culture to kind of get him into that right shape that we need him to be. It always comes back to his weight with him, unfortunately. And yeah, it would be the biggest test ever for Dr. Rick Celebrini, father of Macklin, to get Zion ready to go. But this is also the same team that, you know, was able to get Andrew Bogut healthy and become a serviceable center. This is a team that made JaVale and McGee and Nick Young become serviceable role players on a championship team. This is a team that had Klay Thompson coming off of two of the most gruesome leg injuries you could possibly throw at an NBA player back to playing at pretty damn near close to his old Klay self, well enough to help get this team to another championship. So if there was ever a team that Zion could come to and basically get his career back on the trajectory that we all expected for him at one point, I fully believe, yeah, the Warriors have that ability to make him be that guy. Because Joe Lacob knows that, you know, he talked, you know, a couple weeks ago about maximizing windows. He wants to maximize his own window. And Joe Lacob, he's a smart guy. He knows that Steph won't be here forever. He knows that there are still going to be basketball games that need winning after Steph leaves. And you need a star to build around. And in Zion Williamson, he's, I believe, like 25 years old right now, 26 years old. I mean, he is entering the prime years of his career. And he'd be a perfect guy to
24.
Partner. 24, exactly. Oh, yeah. So he's the perfect age to partner up with Steph right now to where in a couple years you can hand that torch off to Zion and have him be the centerpiece of this franchise that you're building around if you can kind of get him into that, you know, the right situation. That's why I asked, you know, about the situation in New Orleans, because New Orleans is they're not as well run an organization, the Pelicans, as the Warriors are. There's not as much of a fervor for Pelicans basketball down in the Big Easy as there is Warrior basketball here in the Bay Area. My theory is simple. You put Zion in the better situation that is the Warriors, that rubs off on him, you get a better Zion. Am I being oversimplistic with it? Maybe, but at this point, when you see how the Warriors have rehab careers, Andrew Wiggins is another one. It just seems like that would be the next logical project for the Warriors. It then becomes a matter of just do you believe that they have that ability still down at Chase Center to, you know, shine up these dirty coins into a pretty penny?
I just go back to that trade where Zion and eventually gets landed as the number one overall pick. You knew it was going to be Zion Williamson. It's Anthony Davis goes to the Lakers. And I remember just everyone crushing. You know, the Lakers, they gave up so much. They gave up Brandon Ingram. They gave up Lonzo Ball. They gave up everything except for Kyle Kuzma, basically. They gave up everything. And they get Anthony Davis. And they won a title. And it's like, wow, that's like the last time trading for a big star worked in the NBA. They tried to do it with the Clippers. They tried to get Paul George. They tried to get the Kawhi Leonard thing going. It didn't work. You look at the Suns right now, Bradley Beal, tying him with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. They're trying it. It's not working. Like, there is something to be said about the downfall, and maybe that's a strong word to use right now, the downfall of the NBA, at least ratings-wise, it's on a downturn. But
the downfall is near, and it's coming hard.
Tying it, thank you, Robin San Bruno and Sam Lubman, tying it to the super team era and the kind of ending of that era, if you will, maybe it peaked there with the Heat and the Warriors and having those super teams and the Cavs, all of that.
I mean, KD going to the Warriors was next level super.
Correct.
Team.
No, it was. But let's not get it twisted. It's not like the Cavs had, you know, no one. They had Kyrie. They had Kevin Love. And they had LeBron James.
No, they had a super team.
That is a super team.
Yeah.
And, you know, it didn't work out. And then since then, I think we've been trying to, you know, get back to that. Who's the next super team? Oh, the super team. And now we found out, no. It's drafting and retaining your stars now. But that's what wins.
But I think this is the problem that with the NBA right now that you're going to start to see, and is that where are a lot of the best players at right now? What's that next great rivalry going to be between two players going to be? But like, who are the best players right now? It's Luka. You got
Anthony Edwards.
You got Anthony Edwards. Those are all guys on teams that aren't, you know, in huge markets. You know, who's ever really talking about?
Yeah,
Wemby with the Spurs. I mean, yeah. The Spurs were kind of an outlier for a while because they won at such a consistent rate for so long that they kind of made San Antonio a big market.
But they were never ratings bonanza either.
No, but yeah. I mean, they're still, but all the best players, though, are in lower tier markets. So I think what's going to be really interesting is in a few years, where's Shea going to be playing? Where's Anthony Edwards going to be playing? Luka, he'll probably stay in Dallas, but Luka's already kind of shown that he's not a guy that's ever going to be like a Steph LeBron level player, not in terms of performance, but in terms of just the ability to draw eyeballs. Jason Tatum's not that guy. It's just a lot of the guys who would be drawing eyes, they're in markets that no one really cares about. So I'd be curious in a few years when all these guys are free agents and Anthony Edwards, you know, ends up on the Lakers. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander ends up on the Warriors. You know, Paolo Banchero ends up on the Knicks. Those are hypotheticals there. But when you get to that point, I feel like that's kind of like going to be, you're going to have your best players in your biggest markets. And that's kind of what the NBA needs.
888-957-9570. Would you trade for Zion Williamson, a Golden State Warrior fan? Are you looking at that and saying, you know what? Desperate times call for desperate measures, and Sam Lubin's certainly thinking so. Hey, if you take this gamble and it works off, you have the next face of Golden State Warrior basketball for potentially the next decade, and maybe, just maybe, you get Stephen Curry another championship. Oh, and by the way, that vaults him into the top five of all time.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying all time. And when it comes to basketball greats in NBA history, so
in terms of accomplishments, what did you think of it before we hit the break here in a few minutes? He was pretty positive, Nick Friedell was, about Jimmy Butler, which I'll be honest, I'm a little skeptical of Jimmy Butler. They do not talk very favorably of him out in Miami.
He was positive about him fitting into the Warriors locker room, which I actually don't think it would be a huge deal. I think he could fit in the Warriors locker room fine. I just don't think that what you're giving up to get him, I don't think it makes you a better, like, net value-wise, a better team.
No, on the surface, it looks good, but you're gutting your depth, and I feel like it's... I think the phrase I used the other day was just you're rearranging the deck chairs in the Titanic. Like, I think if you add Jimmy Butler to this team, when you factor in what you would have to give up, I think you turn a 43 Warriors team all the way into maybe a 43-win Warriors team.
And you're going to pay him, you would think... And Anthony Slater joined us yesterday, courtesy of the River Islands guest line, our 95.7 The Game Warriors insider, covers the team for The Athletic.
Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, he said that scares the hell out of him, paying Jimmy Butler $40-plus million.
Because you got him for the next few years, right?
Yeah, you'd have to give him a new contract. He's a free agent, unless he opts back into it, in which case you're paying him your 40, 50, whatever the hell it is. Like, that scares the hell out of me, too, paying him that much money.
I don't want Jimmy Butler long term.
No.
It's just anytime, if Pat Riley is kind of like grown tired of you, that's a red flag for me. And there is, down in Miami, they love winners down in Miami, and he has been a winner for them, and they are losing love for him. It's just, Jimmy Butler just seems like, we talk about Zion being kind of a risk here in terms of, you know, him being in the playing shape. Jimmy Butler's his own kind of wild card risk in terms of just like, you're not really quite sure what Jimmy Butler you're going to get when he shows up here. And that's, I don't know if the Warriors could really be in a place where they can afford to make that risk. But then again, I think all the risks the Warriors have to take right here, they're not really in a place where they can afford to take them.
888-957-9570. We can afford to take a break right here because we're about to. And we got Steve Kerr coming up on the other side. Steve Kerr joined Willard and Dibs yesterday. It was Dan Devone and Lorenzo Neal filling in for Dan Dibley and Mark Willard. So we'll get to that interview on the other side. Plus more of your calls, more of your texts after it as we put on a bow on this show and hand it off to Evan Giddings and Matt Steinmetz for Steiny and Guru coming up at the top of the hour. And this segment was sponsored by the all-new Honda of Valley Joe or Vallejo.